Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network.
I'm Anissa.
And I'm Ellen.
And this is Raw. For those of you who are not Rawyers, that's our tribe.
We get real, we get raw.
Yeah. Yeah. Our thing is like no filter ever, unless it's Snapchat.
We're one take whores.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about the one take with the podcast. Boy, that'd be really interesting.
I love that. Listen, it's one take always, yeah, baby. One take always.
It is. You always know. You never know what you're going to get, but you can always trust that what you get is going to be real.
That's it. That's it in a nutshell right there. Yeah. We're done. Drop the mic.
Hey, everybody, it's Anissa.
And it's Ellen.
And this is Anissa and Ellen Raw.
I know. It seems like forever since we've been here, but we've been
really know why that feels. Oh, because isn't that weird? Because all of a sudden, just now, as soon as we did Anissa, Ellen, Raw, I'm like, God, it feels like forever. But then I was with you literally from sunup to sundown last week. Yes. So it's not like I miss you. It's just all of a sudden I was like, huh, it's been a hot minute.
I think we've missed Brian.
We did miss the cuddle monster, and I love when he wears the shirt.
He's like, how many weeks has it been since we've seen him? Maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah.
His arms are humongous.
Oh, he says he's lifting heavy.
He's like lifting heavy. His arms are huge.
They're pretty monstrous.
But he does have his cuddle monster t-shirt on.
I know.
Which is cool.
So cool.
We were in Vegas last week for work, and we've mentioned before that Anissa now works with me at Inspire Brands, so you know we can't get away from each other.
No, it's so good. But you know, there are days where we fight to even grab a cup of coffee together, but we really make the effort to do that.
At least see each other.
Yeah,
at least
once or twice. And I went axe throwing today with the team.
That was amazeballs.
I'm totally going to go
so
do that with
popular.
Rob. It was so fun, Ellen.
I've loved it all over social media. I'm not sure if I like. Ugh.
Oh, so fun. A matter of fact, a lot of people said after today, were like, that was strangely gratifying. And then there were a few people who were really good at it in a way that was like, that's a little scary. How good you are at that.
They're
like, I'm going to stand a little bit further
all that
away
aggression
from you.
Out maybe.
Yeah.
I'm excited today. We've got,
oh my gosh, this is, yes, I feel like I can't believe that she's even
doing this right now.
So
a really good friend of ours is coming back. She was actually on the show with us when we had, Girls Just Want to Have Fun part one and part two. And when we introduce her and you find out which one of those gals it was, you're going to love it because she was, I think she made both of those podcasts.
She's as popular. I mean, she did. She is just, I mean, I thought Jesse was going to die laughing next to me every time she spoke. Was like, oh
she
my
was
gosh,
so, good.
So funny.
So we are welcoming Wendy Lube back onto the show today. Right after we did the two episodes with all the girls, we sort of got a little bit more of a, and I kind of knew Wendy's history a little bit, but we really wanted to bring her back in by herself so she could talk a little bit about what it was like to grow up in her household. Plus, and she's more than willing to talk about it, because this is October and it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Wendy is a breast cancer survivor as of the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, the end of September was when her double mastectomy was.
So we're going to have her.
Not even a month ago.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to have her chat about it. So Wendy, say hi.
And she is calling in. It's not like we're recovering. Drive yourself over here.
So Wendy, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
We're so happy to hear you.
Oh my gosh.
I know. We've been sending lots of thoughts and prayers your way because you know we love you. And tell the audience what you told us when we just called you, when we said hello, when we first called you on the phone. What did you tell us?
My doctor told me after she did all my plastic surgery, she said, my boobs are so small, it's 120 gram each. 120 gram is 4 ounces.
Okay.
That's actually 4 shots of vodka in each boob.
Leave it to Wendy.
That's how small my boobs are.
Wow.
My boobs were. So as I'm going through reconstruction, she's putting in saline to the expander to make my skin stretch. I now look like a porn star in training.
I love it.
I love it.
And I have never seen myself this big.
Well, and you know, prior to Wendy's surgery, we were joking with her at the gym about how, you know, she didn't have very much cleavage before. And now that she's going to get this brand new cleavage that she's completely earned, she's going to show them off in every cleavage shot that she can on social media. She's going to wear all those low-cut dresses and tops and stuff. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I have to say, Wendy, that when you posted in Raw shortly after your diagnosis, and I mean, I can still remember the words that you used. You have such a fresh perspective
yes.
on such a, I mean, a tough diagnosis, and so scary. And you know, you have your kids, and it's scary to think of that, and your husband. And you know, you actually had a conversation with your boobs, and mm-hmm. I love that. Can you share a little bit about the talk you had with your boobs?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the shower one day. I was looking down at them, you know, look. I said, all my life, you are so small. People think I'm transgender sometimes in training, you know, and you are last to come in when I gain weight, first to go when I lose weight. And then I never had fun with you guys after the kids. My nipples are always at 6 o'clock. It's always pointing at 6 o'clock. And now you're trying to kill me. So, you know, you're both out of there.
Exactly. I love it. And I know it's
absolutely
been,
love it.
You and I have talked at the gym. And I know you're so great because you use humor a lot. You know, a lot of us do, but you have, it's like Anissa said, you have such a fresh perspective and you're so funny. But I do know that there have been some very emotional and, you know, moments we've talked about this where, you know, fear and just not knowing, you know, going into everything. You can kind of have a plan. The doctor can kind of tell you a plan, but once coming out of it, you know, after they've removed everything and they've tested everything. So you have such a great sense of humor about you and with such a tough subject. And another thing, and Wendy can attest to this, you know, we've had several, you know, handfuls of people that we know that have recently been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Yeah, in like the
survivors.
Last 5 years.
Yeah.
And what I find so interesting is, and this is my ignorance, I can
right.
remember when, you know, I was growing up, you know, some of my parents' friends, getting breast cancer, but it was so few and far between.
Right.
And now it seems like, and these are healthy women. So
yes. It
really does not discriminate at all, breast cancer.
Right.
I mean, Wendy, you're active, you know,
you're healthy.
Healthy.
I watch
what I eat. You know, I'm 52 years old and I don't have a family history. And that's the thing about what I want to say is when we hear other women, so-and-so had breast cancer, the first thing in your mind is, oh, she must have family history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she must not take care of her body. Oh, she must be overweight. Oh, she must have a big boobs. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay because I've been going to the gym for 20 some years, 4 times a week, and I watch what I eat. You know, I don't smoke. I don't do excessive drinking. I'll be okay. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That is not true. I don't have a family history, but you know, I just found out. So after I was diagnosed, I'll just say, how? I keep asking myself, how? You know, but there's no, is it a Thai bra? Is it the bad sunflower seed that from China I've been, you know, eating? What? How? But nobody knows. And I am able to have a little bit lighter heart or optimistic about because I was diagnosed with stage 0.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think that if it was a little bit more serious, I would probably have been a little bit more heavy-hearted about it, but still having double mastectomy is a big decision. It's really hard, but I didn't hesitate because I did not want I didn't want to fear that it will get my other one too, because I had only on one side and, mm-hmm. and not the other. The other one was healthy. I was like, y'all need to go together.
And did you, were you diagnosed because you went for like your mammogram? You were going for your regular appointment and they detected it?
I was going every year, you know, and last year was okay. This year they want to do a recall. That means they want me to call back. And I didn't think much of it. Oh, recall. They said there's some changes. I said, okay. And they looked at it. They said there's calcification. So I looked, and then radiologists come in and have a private talk with me. And then I still didn't think about much. And she go, we would like you to do a biopsy. There's two areas, like right on your left side of left boobs. I said, okay, biopsy, no problem. I went by myself, like, hey, I'm healthy. This is just kind of like precaution, mm-hmm. because technology is very advanced. And they said, well, we'll call you in 72 hours. So I was a little bit nervous, but I didn't think about much. They probably called me that, it's okay, it's benign, right? And then I got the phone call. They said, I'm sorry, it's cancer, but mm-hmm. it's stage zero, you know? So immediately I thought, okay, then what? You know, I didn't cry. I just like, then what? Lumpectomy? And yeah, but with two areas, maybe mastectomy will be better. And I was thinking, yeah, because I am, like I said, I have four shots of breast tissue. You take the lumps out, it will disfigure me.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So might as well just cut all out. And then I was thinking, if left one is gone, let's take the right one too. So at least when they get reconstructed, they have a symmetry.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's how I was. And I didn't even tell my husband until he came home at 8 o'clock. You know, I just say, hey, cause I did all my crying. Mm-hmm. And then when he came home, you know, our husbands, they work, they have stress. And when you're empty nesters, all they have is you, mm-hmm. you know. Men who work a lot, they don't have a lot of friends like we do. You are their kind of universe. We have villages and supports and fifth fam and things like that, but he doesn't.
That's so true.
So I said, hey, yeah, are you free on Thursday? He said, yes. Why? I need you to go to the doctor with me. I have cancer. And he started crying. I go, no, don't cry. Don't cry. It's stage zero. It's not going to kill me. It's okay. I will get my C-cup that I always want to get because I decided to do a double mastectomy. And he stopped crying right away. Yeah.
We love George. He's so great. And he's a great husband. Yeah. And we love that you call him your baby daddy. And your kids are amazeballs too. So I know that they've been
great support. How did the kids take it?
I did tell them about biopsy, so they did call me and ask how was the results. I have two boys, mm-hmm. you know, they're different from girls. So after I found out, I asked my husband, how should I handle this with kids? Because they're both in college. And first I didn't want to tell them, but I thought I need them too. You know, I need them too. So George said, just say it as lightly as possible because our family gauge their mood by your mood, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? Because they love you. So if you act like you're devastated, then they will be devastated. And if you're depressed, whatever they do out there on their own, they will feel guilty. Oh, I'm not supposed to have fun because mom is miserable and she's devastated and she's sick. You know, I don't mm-hmm. want them to be like that. And this goes back to my childhood, how I was brought up. So I did not want them to be like this, feel that way, right? And that's a whole nother topic was my relationship with my mother. So when they call, I go, yeah, she goes, oh, mom, how was it? Yeah, it is cancer, but it's okay. It's stage zero. It's really early. If I just cut them all off, it's going to be okay. And don't worry about me. I'm going to be strong about this. You know, this is how life is. Sometimes you face it with optimistic and positivity. Then a positive attitude, then you can overcome this. I use it as like a teaching moment and let them know that don't let it get you down kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know? So that helped me too. You know, that talking to them, trying to be strong in front of them helped me as well and prepare myself. You know, it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm okay. It's okay. It'll be okay. I'm strong. You know? Yeah. I have moments, but I can overcome it.
Well, you're very strong and resilient, and you have so many friends. I mean, everybody at the gym loves you. You are a really good friend to literally to everybody. And, you know, I mentioned it in the beginning of the episode that we really planned on you coming back to talk to us about your relationship with your mother. And then, of course, in fact, I think I DM'd or texted you right after we taped the Girls Just Want to Have Fun episodes. And I said, hey, Anissa and I would love if you would come back, and you were very willing to do it. Then of course, since that time, then, you know, you have been focusing on this health issue. So since you did mention it just a minute ago about your relationship with your mom, let's backtrack for just a second. Because one of the most interesting things about that is, you know, I'm Asian too. My mother's from the Philippines. And we were actually talking about it with Brian right before we called you. You know, in Asian society, females tend to be fairly submissive. Nowadays, modern era, it's not, you know, it's not anything like it was back in the older days, and back in, you know, when you watch those older movies where, you know, Korean women walk behind their husbands and all that good stuff. But, you know, I was taught, you know, growing up, especially with my mother and then her family, that, you know, you always were very extremely respective of your elders. And I mean, most society is like that, but for some reason in the Asian culture, it's like very, you know, very respect, you know, my Lola and my Lolo, who are my grandparents, and my aunts and my uncles, my tias, you know, we all were very, more so, I think, than, not that I was disrespectful to my father's side of the family, but it was just ingrained in us. It was something different. So tell us the story about you and your mother for a second so that we can talk about why it's such an interesting relationship.
First of all, my mom did not have a lot of education. She only went to middle school, and she got married early. They married her off early because they didn't want to support her or spend money on her, my grandparents, right? It's like daughters are somebody else's kid anyway, somebody else's people anyway, so we don't want to put more money into educate her. She's up to an age, we're just going to marry her off at 17, 18. So she only know her role model as a mother is her mother, and her mother was very manipulated, you know? And in her mind, in Asian culture, total obedience is it for kids, right? Total obedience.
Exactly.
And she herself is control. So my earliest memory of her exercising her control was I was 5 years old, maybe four or five. I was going to kindergarten for the first time. And we learn a lot of songs. They teach you a lot of songs. All you do is sing songs. So I would come home and sing all the songs that I learned. And she liked hearing me sing songs. And one day she asked me to sing song for her. And I don't know why I was having a tantrum. I said, no. She said, sing songs. I said, no. So she smacked me. And I cried. You know, you could smack a five-year-old on the face, you will cry. She said, sing song. And I said, no, because singing is for a happy thing. Once you cry, you cannot sing happy thing, right? Happy songs. So I still wouldn't sing. She said, oh, yeah. So she got a broomstick, as a plastic broomstick. She beat me. And then by this time, I'm just like catching up my breath, and I couldn't sing. She said, sing song. And I go, sing the song. And I said, I just couldn't do it now because I'm crying harder.
Right.
So she dragged me to the bathroom. She got a basin of water, and she stripped me to my underwear and dunked my head in the water. I call it waterboarding. It's the same thing. She dunked my head in the water, and she lifted me up. I go, are you going to sing or not? And I go, I will sing the song. I will sing the And I was like, my butt was black and blue. She dunked me twice just for good measure. And I never can be able to say no to her, ever. Ever. You know, that stayed with me. And every time we have a visitors, I would just like turn around and show them my butt. It's like, my mom beat me, you know. But at that time, that's tough love. If you do that in this country, some five-year-old show you their butt being black and blue, they call defect on you, right?
Yeah, they do.
But back then, not in early 70s in Asia, that's just like, you must just please your mom so she beat you up. You know, because that's kind of norm. It's extreme, but it's normal. So, like, oh, okay, her mom is really strict. That's all they can say. Her mom's really strict, but she's going to be listening to her mom now. So throughout my life, that was how. And she did that to me once again when I was 7, because I have ADD, and I would not be able to finish my homework, and I would just kind of, like, keep getting distracted. And at that time, there's no such a thing called ADD. They don't know what ADD means. Mm-hmm. They just know that you're undisciplined. And she got fed up with me that I am not being able to focus and concentrate. So this time, where we live, we had a tub. The first place didn't have a tub. She drew a tub of water. Luckily, it was a little bit warmer. And she stripped me down to underwear. She dragged me by my hair. I was kicking and screaming to the bathroom, and she dumped me again, you know, like a whole body instead of the whole head. And my grandmother from my father's side was at home, and she warned my grandmother, Mom, do not interfere. So I was screaming for my grandmother to help me, but my grandmother was so distraught, but she didn't want to go against my mother. So I know she was looking out the window and praying, you know. So that was the second time. And after that, the dunking was done. But the smacking, the beating lasted in my 20s before I got married. And the very last time she tried to hit me was I was 36 and my kids are already 7 or 8. And she was trying to spoil for a fight because she was in a bad mood. My dad would not engage her in a fight. I went to her house to pick up my kid's bike. She started picking a fight, and I got agitated. I talked back to her, so she tried to smack me. And I was 36.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I tried very hard not to be disrespectful to my parents, but, you know, if my mom... My mother was not like that, but she, you know, it was the same thing where... In this day and age, if you were to pop, you know, spank your child, people would freak out. But that was the norm in my house. She didn't do it very much, but, you know, if you deserved it, she definitely would take a wooden spoon and pop your butt, you know. To be honest, if I did something now at 51 and she wanted to pop my butt, I would let her, because it's just... You know, it's how we were raised. I mean, you're raised in just a totally different, you know, there were a lot of things we were not allowed to do because she did not, that's not how they lived their lives. That's not what she believed in, you know, dating at a very late age. Certain things that I could not do because she just didn't believe in it, because that's not how she grew up. And she didn't want us to be Americanized that much, that kind of thing. But it's... it's just so interesting because you never, I don't know that I know another Asian mother that would beat their child
that
like
that. That was abusive.
Yeah,
was
abusive.
So when she tried, when you were 36, when that happened, what stopped her? This
my
last
dad.
Time. Your dad.
My dad, who was never able to go again. My dad is 11 years older than my mother, and he is one of those, he's an enabler, because she's so domineering, he does not dare to go against her wishes, because if he go against her wishes, he will get it, because my mom beats him.
I remember
my
you
mom
telling
is
that.
We have a severe domestic violence issue, so she beats him. But at that time, I was financially supporting my parents. I was mentally and physically supporting my parents because, you know, their Asian parents don't speak a lot of English. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, like very living in a retirement income. So I am the one, and my younger brother already estranged himself from them because of my mother's temper. Mm-hmm. So I'm the only one they have left. And when she tried to hit me, my dad stopped her and said, "Stop. If you chase this one away, we have nobody." Mm-hmm. And he's doing it out of survival, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing it out of survival. So, oh, my mom's, "Oh, yeah, you're afraid of that. You want to be a good dad. Oh, wow," you know. And so I left, and she won my dad. She started turning it around to him on my dad, trying to give him a hard time. "Oh, you want to be the good guy. You know, you don't want me to hear. What's she going to do?" And then my dad ignored her. She left him, went to my aunt's, and then she wanted him to apologize. He was trying to stand on his ground. He wouldn't apologize, so she called me, left a message, cursed me out, calling me all kind of nasty names, said, mm-hmm. "Because you little bitch, your dad would not apologize to me. Aren't you happy now? So it's my fault."
So one of the things that I find so interesting, Wendy, because I do have, you know, some domestic violence in my childhood, I'm amazed because I don't, and you can correct me, but just listening to you, like, I am not picking up anger or like, I still have, I mean, even though I know my dad's childhood was so much worse than mine and there is some understanding and some forgiveness there, I definitely still am bitter and a little angry about how he was. And I just don't hear that in your voice. Like, I just, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. I do, but I blame it on her upbringing. Mm-hmm. I blame it on her having a poor role model of a mother that who was very manipulative. I blame it on her lack of education and traditional. Ellen noticed, for a year, I estranged myself from her because I'm sorry to say this, a part of my cancer is due to stress that caused by them. Mm-hmm. You know, people who knows me know that there should not be a reason for me to get this. And stress is a big, big, big part of it. And they are the one main element that gave me a lot of stress to a point that, you know, I just like finally distanced myself from them because it was so toxic.
Yeah.
She, as she's not happy with her marriage with my father, she want me to choose sides. She want me to help her punish my father, you know, all that stuff. And I'm caught in the middle, you know, and my dad would not relent of the behavior that, and he's 80. He was talking to this woman, 70-year-old lady on the phone for, you know, he's infatuated with a 70-year-old lady who respect him as a man. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a long story. That's going to be another freaking podcast. How old, you know, how you let your old man, you know, run away from you? Yeah. So I finally last June I kind of like took myself out of the equation. I was like, I cannot handle this anymore. So I took myself out and. One of the reasons when I first got diagnosed, I did not tell my parents. I didn't let them know. I didn't let them know until after my surgery. My parents decided to move to Taiwan because I would not have anything to do with them. They cannot be self-sustaining. They're moving back to Taiwan. And one of the reasons I didn't tell them is I know eventually what she will say to my face is, "God is punishing you by giving you cancer. Because you deserted your parents." Because she said that to me about my brother, who estranged from her for 15 years, and he was not doing well financially. And she told me many times, the reason your brother is not successful and not doing well because he deserted his parents and God is punishing him. Mm-hmm. So what do you think I would hear?
Right.
Like, yeah. I was okay last year. I got cancer this year. Yeah. Karma, bitch. That's what I was going to hear.
I mean, that's...
Luckily, after I told her, she didn't. She's a mom. Still, she's a mom first.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, she's still a mom first. She came. She asked me if she can be able to come see me with my dad. I said yes. And then, you know, she come and she's all maternal and motherly. But she's going to be leaving in a couple of weeks. So I think she want to make nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So... That's where she's
right now. She's visiting with you. She's staying with you all.
No. She still have her place.
Oh, okay.
She still have her place. So it's a very ironic what is going on, because I am the way I am because I had cancer. I have to use the past tense because I'm cancer free.
Yes,
I have to use that. I'm cancer free.
We're so excited to hear
and
that.
Because I had cancer, I was able to say things that. Bundled up, not everything, but I was able to say things that bothered me about them, because I was like, you know, I just don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is all bottled up all this time. I'm just going to say what I need to say. You know, I did not unleash everything because they're old.
Right.
I don't want to create that kind of, she couldn't be able to take it. I reserve a lot. I just tell her what I felt recently, you know, what is it I saw recently that you guys really did me wrong? It's a long story, but really did me wrong about so what and what you did, and that's not right. And she actually apologized to me first time.
That's ever. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, it was. I guess it caught my attention. I can't even remember what you said one day about it. And I just thought it was so interesting because what you had told me, I mean, she was extremely abusive, like more so than any female I've ever.
I've never known. Don't know. I mean, I'm sure I do know someone who had a mother who was abusive, but not to my knowledge. This is the first time that I've ever heard that. It just, you know, you just don't hear it very often. Are there times when you're afraid for your dad's safety or?
Yes. Because he was stabbed. He was stabbed by my mother.
And
he had to go get stitches in the emergency room. After I removed myself from their life, this is what I heard. And he told me himself, you know, he get kicked and punched. When we were younger, I remember I was second or third grade. My brother was 2 years younger than I am. They were fighting. They always used violence to fight. Mom always hit him. And that would not return the violence until he's really pissed off. And she's like, oh, how dare you? You hit me. You dare hit me. I will kill you. And she will go to the kitchen and get a knife. And all I remember is, in Asia, we were living in a very small place, so we were not allowed to go to sleep. When your parents fight, you're not going to have a peace. Oh, your parents are, we're about to have a divorce, and you are having enough peace to sleep. Y'all better get up and be a witness of what is going on. Mm-hmm. So we were just like huddled together. Mm-hmm. All I remember is my dad was wearing a white shirt, and then there was like blood on the armpits because she accidentally stabbed him while he was fighting her off. But this has come out like really interesting. My dad was 28. My mom was 17 when they met. The marriage was not a blessed by my mother. So when he finally got her and married her, he was like cherishing her, you know, babying her. And the first time they get into a fight, you know, he said, oh, I'm sorry, baby. What would make you feel not mad anymore? And she said, I'm still mad. He goes, okay. Well, why don't you slap my face? Would that make you feel better? That's how it started.
Oh, my
gosh. She said, okay. And she smacked him. So next time they get into a fight, and she said, I'm still mad. And he said, okay, what would make you feel better? And she said, I want to smack you. I think that would make me feel not mad anymore.
So, oh my gosh.
She smacked him again. So that has become a habit. She's 17. She's a kid, right?
Yeah.
So I told my dad, I said, Dad, you did this to yourself because you brought home a baby tiger. Mm-hmm. And it's so cute. Everybody say give him a raw chicken meat. You decide to give him a live chicken because it's so cute. Mm-hmm. And so this tiger has got so used to hunting blood, the tiger got bigger. And next thing is a goat. Next thing is a cow. Now the tiger is full grown, and the tiger want to hunt a human being. And you mm-hmm. say, no, no more. I don't want you to hit me anymore. But the tiger said, this is the way I am.
This is how we've been together.
You let her hit you all these years, and all of a sudden you said no more. She's not going to take that from you.
Wow. Mm. That's a really interesting analogy, yeah. too.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, do you have conversations with your children about it? Do they know?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. I do. I always trying to do exact opposite of what my mother does. Now, like being sick. If my mother had breast cancer, no matter what stage it is, you better not even crack a smile or have anything because it's all about me. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to come home every weekend. You have to like cater to me and all that stuff. I don't want that. I don't want it. Their life does not revolve around me, mm-hmm. you know, but for her, it does. It does. So that's the difference. And I always tell my kids, I said, I try not to be like your grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not my role model. I said, my mother-in-law actually is my role model as a mother, you know. So I do tell them, I try not to borrow anything from them. In the same way that they tell me everything.
Right.
You know, I treat them like an adult because they're an adult. And so they turn around and they tell me about things too. Yeah. So we have a very, like this past weekend, my son Michael turned 24 mm-hmm. and I throw him a big party
I
for
saw
him.
The pictures.
You know,
it was awesome.
I went with my brain still coming out of my body, you yes. know, and I was smiling. And I was taking pictures.
You
I was
were.
Joking with his friends. I didn't do shots like I was supposed to do with all these cute grad students. But he was so thankful. And I was thinking, mm-hmm. my mother will never do that to me, for me.
Yeah.
Never. I don't care. You're 24. You're young, pretty, and you know, energetic. I'm about, you know, I'm so old and I have cancer. Why should I do anything to celebrate you?
Mm-hmm.
Poor me. And that's not what I want.
Right.
That's
Wendy,
not what
do
I want.
You, do you talk to your brother?
I reconcile with my brother because I estranged myself from him for 10 years because of my mother, because he refused to reconcile with my mother. So my mom was really mad at me for not making it happen in
I
some
see.
Way.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Her misery is either my fault or my father's fault. So mm-hmm. I finally couldn't handle it, and I kind of stepped out of the situation with him. And I don't know, as I turned 50, I just realized that life is so short. Why? Right? So I reconciled with him. And so I told my mother this past Sunday, we had a three-hour conversation. I said, Mom, you're going to go to Taiwan with Dad. They're going to retire there. They're just going to stay there forever. That's what they say. They're selling everything. They're selling their townhome and cars and everything. I said, I'm sorry. I'm not going to ask them to stay. I think they would hoping that I asked them to stay, but I'm not. I was mm-hmm. thinking at this point, I need to love me first,
yeah.
right? Because they fight so much.
The stress
and everything
is
not they fight,
good for you.
My mom would take pills to scare my dad. It's like, okay, hitting you is not good enough. Using a knife on you is not good enough. Well, leaving you is not good enough. Then I'm going to take sleeping pills.
Wow.
And she did that for twice.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, Mom, my brother and I, we are going to depend on each other and help each other out now. you know, so you don't have to worry about us anymore. She said, oh, okay, that's good. Yeah. It's the saga is very long and winding, you know. Yeah.
It is.
So I am in good place with my brother. I am supporting him in a helping him out, you know, in a many, many ways. And then I didn't knew. I thought I was the one that was always going to help him because I've been putting braces on his kids, you know, give him a job, you know, all that stuff. But then again, a year later, I got sick and his wife was coming and washing and cleaning and feed me and things like that. So
that's good, though.
Karma.
Yeah.
Karma. Yeah.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you all reconciled.
Yes. Yes.
I have to say, again, talking to you is like listening to wisdom speak. Every time I've listened to you, even when I read what you post and things like that, you are one of the wisest women I know. And I just...
Thank you.
I honestly just think there's something so much deeper to you than just...
See, couples?
Just the person, yes. I mean, it's crazy to me because it's like listening to truth when you speak and the way that you parent and just having come from what you came from, turning out the way that you have and the way that you are with your boys and with your husband doesn't look a thing like your upbringing. And that's truly rare.
It's Wendy is, you know, we met Wendy at the gym and Wendy is just known for, she's her vivacious personality. She's so funny. She's,
her amazing Halloween parties.
Yeah, she, there's always an undertone of, there's always a little bit of dirty, sexy undertone to what she says. And she's so funny, but, and for the most part, you know, and she's, it's, as I said earlier, she is a great friend to everybody. If you, if something happened and you needed her, she would come and she would let you, give you money. She would drive you wherever you needed. But I've had such good, really deep conversations with her. You know, we've had a few where she's not that all that. She can look like fluff. She can look like funny, funny. Oh, ha! She's beautiful. You know, always joking, always the life of the party. But she's so wise, and she has, I mean, she has really good advice if you need it. And I love, and I love that about her. I mean, truly would do anything for you. No matter, even if she didn't know you that well.
Yes.
She would do it.
You have a wonderful grace about you, Wendy. That is,
thank you.
It's,
thank you.
I learn from you every time I listen to you. You make me, as I listen, I like play what you're saying in my mind and I'm evaluating. I'm evaluating my own decisions, what I would do in that situation. And I, you just give me little gems that when I walk away from the conversation, I'm better for it. And that's such a rare quality. I feel so blessed to know you.
And I think that's one of the main reasons why we wanted you to come on, because it's like Anissa said, you have a fresh, different, you know, there could be, I know a handful of people that have gone through somewhat similar situations that would not be as forgiving, that would not be as, you know, would still not be talking to their mother, would still not be, would probably have some really terrible things to say. And you're just, I know.
Amazing.
You're amazing. And listen, girl, I want to see some cleavage shots.
No shit. And cancer did not stand a chance with you. Just saying. I mean, I, you know, my best friend, I lost her to breast cancer. And, so I know how devastating it can be. And, you know, she left behind an 8-year-old daughter and a husband when she died. And, and it was devastating. And I just could not see how it even stood a chance with you.
It didn't.
So
I cannot do, I mean, I honestly, and I met, I don't know if you, I know you guys were out of town. I know, I don't know if you read my post on Raw.
No, I haven't yet, but I will. I've heard about it.
Without all of you, the day of my surgery, everybody, good luck wishes. A lot of people were posting the pictures of the jewelry that I make, mm-hmm, that they got either as a gift or as their purchase. They all posted. I went in to surgery singing.
Oh.
They put a stuff in IV. I don't know. I think they said it's like a relaxer. I think it's mm-hmm. vodka. I was singing, getting rolled into the OR. Shot. Everybody. I didn't know. And the physiologist told me when they walked me, did you know you were singing? I go, no, I didn't. You were singing shot. I go, oh, God. And then
I love it.
I was flirting with one of the intern too while she was going to OR with me. So I will not be able to go back to Piedmont again.
And when I first texted her after she came out, I was like, stop flirting with those doctors. And she was like, I'm asking everybody, give me my meds in a shot glass.
Oh, my gosh. You're such a delight, so Wendy. Go ahead.
Every cc the doctor is putting in my boobs, even though it stretches and it hurts and I couldn't go to the bathroom, I remember that everything that she put in is your love to me. I know I'm getting emotional because I went through a very emotional and physical experience, but your love, and I hope that people who has been supporting me could hear this. What you have done for me made me feel like I'm not alone, that because of you, I want to be stronger and be more positive and you know, kick away the fearful thoughts of, you know, reoccurrences and other stuff. So thank you so much. Thank you so much. Like,
no, God,
I will never forget. Well, I won't forget this experience, of course, but those who that would stay with me whole time, you know, cheering me on like this. Yeah.
We love you.
We love you. And of course, we're crying, and Brian's now trying to find us some tissues.
I know. So we would, and we definitely want to, you know, we want to stay in touch. Obviously, we're going to stay in touch with you, but we want to stay in touch with you on the podcast. And so we definitely want to.
Oh, well, we're going to definitely have
Thanksgiving.
You come back.
Yeah. We got to have you come back for a Thanksgiving episode. Yeah. We'll do another girl talk episode. But thank you so much for joining us today, Wendy. I want to come and do some Reiki, so you let me know when you're off the pain meds and I'm coming and giving you some Reiki. I don't cook,
okay.
So I wasn't bringing her a meal. Good God. She'd be like, please don't cook for me again, but I'm bringing you some Reiki.
Yeah.
Definitely are going to come by and see you.
So thank you.
Yeah, we knew that you had a bunch of people coming by. So
we
love you, girlfriend.
Love you.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you soon.
Next podcast will be how shameless Wendy can get it with C-cup boobs.
I love it. Bring on the shameless
Bring
sister.
It on, girlfriend.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Okay. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. All right. You can hear Anissa and Ellen on multiple platforms. You can visit atlpn.com, AtlantaPodcastNetwork.com, and on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and now on Spotify.
Just search for ATL Podcast Network or Anissa and Ellen Raw to find our show.
Instagram, Atlanta Podcast Network, ATL Podcast Network, Ellen Nickel,
Anissa Amison, and Anissa Ellen. And Raw.
Yes.
That was awesome. Okay.